Louise Jameson, star of stage and screen, welcome to West Kent Radio. How are you, first of all?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's lovely to be here. I'm still in Kent, although sadly no longer in Tunbridge Wells, which was my home for 33 years.
Was it really?
It was 33 years, so it was quite a wrench moving.
Oh, well, we miss you, but you're coming back. You're coming to the Amelia in Shakespeare's Mistress. The whole performance includes you talking about your long and illustrious career.
It's basically a desert island discs, but instead of using music, I use speeches and I interlink them with anecdotes from my life. And I've been doing it on and off for over a decade now. So it's like an amoeba. It moves all the time, you know, all the new stories, and I might kick out a few old ones. And when I started it, it was all a bit worthy. It was all a bit, you know, tea and crumpets and bring your mum on a Sunday afternoon. But I've shaken it up a little bit. So just a heads up that there's a bit of swearing in there. So we put out a warner to say, and a couple of slightly risque stories from my past. I thought, how far can I push this? And I thought, come on, you're over 70 now. Who cares?
I want to talk about the performance in more detail later, but I want to talk about your career. I've been very lucky to have spoken to you a few times, Louise, and what always strikes me about it is you're always so open, you're very friendly, you're lovely to talk to for a start, but you're always so friendly, you're always very open, and you're very interesting. You have had a very long career, and there must be so many stories to tell. When you look back, what are the standout things that come to mind?
That's a really difficult question. I mean, obviously, come and see the show, and you'll see.
We don't want any spoilers. Yes,
but I would say, you know, job-wise, playing Rosalind in Regent's Park was pretty standout. You know, on a midsummer's night under a full moon, my very first introduction to Shakespeare was my mum taking me to see A Midsummer Night's Dream in Regent's Park. This is back in the days when it was deck chairs and no microphones, you know. And apparently, I was about nine, and I stood up and I went, "That was wonderful. It couldn't have been Shakespeare." It was my first comment. But it was the beginning of the, you know, a great long love affair. So really, my highlights have been Shakespeare on stage. And on television, it would have to be Blanche in Tenko, which was a series I did in the early 80s about a women's prisoner of war camp.
I love that series. Brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah. It written by women for women, about women in politics. It was groundbreaking.
Unusual for those times, I think.
Very, very. Mm. And that was my last job before I had children. So it was that, you know what it's like when you have a child. It's like, you know, there's the BC days.
Yes.
And then your AD days. And then, so it really does stand out, you know, as a time of freedom, really, and being able to devote absolutely everything to my work. And after that, you just sort of live a life of guilt, don't you? I mean, you try and be a good mother, and then you try and be a good actor, and you've never got quite enough time and energy for both. And you're just spread very, very thin from there on after. Mm. And now they've, you know, grown up and they've got kids of their own. I have a little of that spark that goes, I really can devote. Of course, there are grandchildren as a huge distraction who I adore. Mm. I really can every now and again, no, sorry, I'm learning lines today, or I'm working on a script today, and I can just shut myself away and do that again. I suddenly thought that the other day. It's quite a recent feeling that I've got that. I really can devote everything to one thing now.
It is quite liberating, isn't it? I'm in that same area myself, and it is, what do they call it, the third age. It is literally you are reinvented somehow. You find yourself again, I find.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. You can either decide to get old or decide to embrace this. I mean, I kept waiting for this old age thing to be over, like about a flu. You know, like this ache will disappear and it's going to be fine. And of course it doesn't. You have to sort of work on it and do your yoga. And I've stopped drinking completely, and that's made a huge difference. I'm less foggy. Yes, yeah. I just thought, let's just cut this out for a couple of days. I thought, cut it out for a month, cut it out for 2 months. Suddenly I wasn't drinking.
Yeah, and you don't miss it once you get past that. Because it's habit forming, isn't it? You know, you know, I'll have a glass of wine. I'll have a glass of wine. And yeah, it's the same with crisps and chocolate. Same thing. It's habit forming. You've worked with some great people over the years. There's a couple I want to mention. Well, of course, there's Tom Baker. We have to talk about Tom Baker. Yeah. Because, of course, you were Doctor Who's assistant, Leela.
He was so excited. He is the sort of senator of the Doctors, isn't he? With that voice. He was either going to be out of work forever or he was going to be like a mega star. And he, you know, thank goodness, went for the second option. It's no secret. We didn't get on so well back in the day. You know, I worked with him in 1976, 1977. Since then, we've done an enormous amount of audio work together with a company called Big Finish, where we reprise Doctor and Leela. Leela's had far more adventures on audio than she ever did on camera. And we get on so well. I never thought I would be saying this at this age. I thought, you know, once I'd left the show, that was it. I'd never see him again. And suddenly we reconnected in the, I can't remember when, turn of the century-ish. So for, you know, 20 odd years now, we've been really good friends.
And do you think that's because you've both become older and wiser? Has he grown into himself a bit? Become, as you get older, you're allowed to become eccentric as you get older, perhaps. I don't know.
Maybe. I think he found his soft side, his quiet side, his humble side, and very publicly and genuinely apologised to me for, you know, behaving badly, basically.
How badly did he behave?
You know, I don't want to mouth him. He's a friend of mine now. Yeah. I just didn't enjoy going into work, you know, which is sad, isn't it? Given what amazing programme. Doors it's opened. I mean, I only got Toast, for example, because Matt Berry's a huge Doctor Who fan. I'm convinced of that. And all my writing, that's all stemmed from Doctor Who, because I was asked to write a Doctor Who story and it was a success called The Abandoned. This is for audio. And then I co-wrote it with my friend Nigel Fairs. And then we went from there, coming more and more commissions. So, you know, I'm incredibly grateful to it.
So you mentioned your writing. Are you writing other things apart from Doctor Who?
Yes, I am. We were, I devised and co-wrote a series called Attagirl about the air transport auxiliary women of World War II, very unsung heroines. Mm. And we were finalists in the Audi Awards in New York, which is like the Oscars of the audio world.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. We didn't win, sadly. Ugh. And we were also shortlisted for BBC. I was sitting beside John Culshaw in the front row. And we were both up for something, and we both were runners up. And John, you know, very graciously was on his feet applauding the person who got it. I heard myself, as we didn't win, we were runners up, as we didn't win, I heard myself go, oh.
You didn't have your Oscar face on.
and then put my face on and stood up. And
well, at least it was an honest reaction. So the other person I wanted to talk to you about, because I only read this the other day, and I don't know if it's true, but maybe on Wikipedia, so maybe it is true.
Well, of course it's true if it's on Wikipedia.
Of course it's true. Leslie Grantham.
Oh, yes.
So what happened there?
When I was at the Bristol Old Vic, which was the job after Doctor Who, I played Portia in Merchant of Venice, I shared digs with a probation officer. And she had a client, I'm not sure what the correct term is, in prison, who was a lifer and who was about to be released. So he was doing his 6 months rehabilitation, being allowed out at weekends, that kind of thing. She asked if I'd be his pen pal because she believed him to be a rather talented actor. So for 6 months, I wrote to Leslie. And then
in prison.
Yeah, yeah, he was in prison. He was a lifer. He killed somebody.
He killed somebody.
Yeah, yeah. It was. It's all over. I'm not talking out of school. It was
no,
all
no,
over.
No.
And he was ever so young. I mean, he was like 16, and he was with a whole load of other squaddies who were egging him on. So I went to see him in a play called, I think it was called My Three Angels, which was about escaped convicts. They had their own amateur production in there, and he was rather good. And then when he started his coming out for the weekend, my then fella and I used to have him come and stay with us. he had a complicated relationship with his family, as you can imagine. So he didn't always have somewhere to go. So he'd come and stay with us, and we'd knocked his audition speeches into shape. And then he got into Webber Douglas, and then the rest is history. He trained up and came out and was a star.
My goodness.
When he got EastEnders, they called Julia Smith, the producer, called the company together and said, this is going to be a big show. This is really going to take off. I can feel it in my water. If any of you have got skeletons in the closet, then come and tell me now and we will protect you. So Leslie thought, well, that's it. He went to the office and he had his contract in his hand and he put it on the table and he said, you might want to take this back when I tell you my story. And he told his story and she went, nah, keep your contract. We'll look after you. It's fine. Thank you for telling me. And that was that.
My goodness. So yeah, you were also in EastEnders, of course. Were you in at the same time? I can't remember.
No, I came in long after, Leslie. Yeah.
Oh, that would have been nice to be.
It would have been interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, okay, we need to talk about the Amelia and what you're going to be doing there. So let's go back to that. It's an intriguing title, Shakespeare's Mistress. Did he have a mistress?
We don't really know much about Shakespeare's life at all. There's a wonderful book by, oh my goodness, I'm struggling for the name, Bill Bryson, Shakespeare. And he maintains we only know 4 facts about Shakespeare. Real, hard, solid facts. So if you study the writing, it looks like he was probably bisexual. And there is this phantom dark lady of the sonnets that we're not quite sure who he's writing to. But the chances are he had a mistress. You know, he had Anne, his wife, who was older than him, who stayed in Stratford most of the time with the children.
And he was in London.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. He. One of the facts we know about him is that he left his second best bed to Anne. That was what she got.
His second best. I wonder why his second best.
Well, actually, the second best was actually the best because it was the best for the. It was the bed for the guests. So it was actually the best, but it was always called the second best.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're performing this in the atrium.
I am.
Mm. Yeah. So it's going to be quite a cozy group, I would imagine.
It's a very intimate piece. I mean, what I'd like the audience to feel is hopefully what you feel now, which is that we're chatting. That's what I'd like them to come in. And occasionally it gets precious with a piece of amazing poetry, which I can't take credit for. And the pieces I've chosen are pieces that I just shouldn't get in the way of. I'm just a conduit from the author to the audience, and I have to do that as cleanly and clearly as possible. But I treat it with great respect, even if some of it is tongue-in-cheek. And I got offered, somebody suggested that perhaps I did it at the Assembly Rooms, but it just isn't the right, it's not the right place for it. It's too big, too vast, too, you know, you need opera in there, don't you? Or stand up, which is kind of, you know, slightly brash and out there. You're not this kind of very, very intimate, let me tell you about my internet dating kind of conversation.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Yeah, I imagine as a smaller group, the audience is less intimidated also. They're more able to become part of the conversation. Because you're right, shouting a question from the audience to someone who's standing on a stage, for me, I'd keep very quiet. I would think, well, I'm not going to say that. People are going to think I'm an idiot. But perhaps when you feel that close and you are in a group, people are more likely to become involved. Would you find, is it all, when you perform it, is it always in that situation, that setup?
It's always pretty intimate, yes. And lighting can, which I'm not quite sure what the Amelia has to offer on lighting. Lighting can really help cozy a place up, as you know, and help concentrate the sound. Weirdly, you know, if you very slowly fade lights, you'll find the audience will stop chattering as well. It just kind of strokes you if it's done properly. So hopefully we'll have a little bit of help from lights.
Mm. So you enjoy performing in Tunbridge Wells. What are audiences like?
Oh, they're great. They really are great. And maybe I'm helped because I've lived there for 33 years. There's always somebody I know in the audience. So I'm never appearing before a bunch of complete strangers. So maybe that's why I've always felt a great warmth from an audience that you don't always feel in other theatres. Sometimes you have to woo them over, but I've never felt that with Tunbridge Wells.
And so you're prepared for, well, the questions that will come and people will be asking about you. Are you prepared to be completely open, or are there areas where you'll go, no, I'm not going to talk about that?
Well, I'm quite clever at, you know, dodging a bullet over the years.
Okay, so there are VIP tickets.
Yes.
How's that going to work?
Well, we're going to do a meet and greet afterwards for people. It's a fundraiser for Domestic Abuse Volunteer Support Services, quite a mouthful, known as DAVS. They're an amazing small charity that received no funding whatsoever. They were the Queen's Charity of the Year a couple of years ago. They only employ four people. Everybody else is a volunteer. Everybody else is a survivor. Everybody else is trained up. You're talking to people who know what it is to be abused. So we want to make as much money as possible, obviously, to support them. So the VIP ticket, that's where your money will go, straight to Domestic Abuse Volunteer Support Service.
That's brilliant. So what does a VIP ticket bring?
After the show, I'll just pop into a private room with a few people and have a real, real intimate personal conversation, a few canapes, a bit of champagne, and hopefully, you know, really get to know some of my audience.
Sounds wonderful. Sounds wonderful. Okay, so it's happening pretty soon. In fact, it's April, isn't it? April 23rd.
Shakespeare's birthday.
Oh! Was that a coincidence?
Kind of. We were going to do it in January, but we decided nobody had any money in January. You know, it's the most miserable month for everyone. Yeah. So we thought, when else can we do it? And it's actually the same week as my birthday. So I'd already booked that week off from Emmerdale, because we're allowed 29 days leave. So I thought, I'll take my birthday week off. So I said, I know I've got that week off. Shall we do it at the end of that week? And they went, yeah.
We haven't talked about Emmerdale. That's just reminded me. Yes, you are in Emmerdale at the moment.
I am playing a latent lesbian.
You're enjoying that?
I love it. I'm not so fond of the A1. I spend a lot of time thumping up and down the A1 in my little mini. But the actual work and the people I'm working with are fantastic. And when I went for the, we did it on Zoom like this. I went for the chat about my character after I'd accepted the job. And they said, I was going to say, can we not give her a cardigan and a Zimmer frame just because of the white hair? Can we make her active and vibrant and, you know, interested? And I hadn't drawn breath, and the producer went, so we think she's going to be a lesbian, and she's going to come out in about 6 months' time, and it's going to be very hard for her. And I went, oh, okay. It really came out of left field. I had no idea I was about to play a lesbian. I've had such amazing response on Twitter from women who've come out late in life, going how supportive they feel it is, and what a great story, and how engaged they feel, and they hope I find love at some point. Well, you have to watch Emmerdale to find out.
Do you know how the character's going to develop? Do they give
About 12 months in advance.
Okay.
But I have to sign an NDA and all that.
So you don't like open your script and go, oh my God, look what's happening this week.
No, I don't. I have a sort of vague idea. And there's some things they tell me and I think, hope that's going to be handled delicately. And it is. It always is. It's a fantastic duty of care at Emmerdale. I really love working there. 2 weeks after I started, my darling aunt died, age 97. And I was very upset. And they not only gave me the day off for the funeral, they offered me another 2 days, and they gave me a car on the day of the funeral so that I would be driven there and driven back. And I'm talking like 800 miles. It was like I was up north, that was down south. And they really, really looked after me. And I'd been there, I don't know, 3 weeks.
That's good.
It buys loyalty, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely.
It really does. They're like that with everyone. There are 67 of us in the cast.
A big cast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. You don't meet people for like years.
Well, it's lovely to see you back on our screens again. Looking forward to seeing you in Tunbridge Wells at the Amelia. So that's the 23rd of April. Tickets are available from the Amelia website. Louise Jameson, great to speak to you again.
Thank you
for giving us the time, and look forward to seeing you soon.
I'll see you then.
Yeah, you take care. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.